From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, welcome everyone. Tonight we're going to get right into the Drew Peterson trial, and we have Joel Brodsky. Joel is one of the defense team members. Joel, welcome back to the show.
Oh, glad to be back.
Nice to have you. You and I have been talking about this case for actually a few years now. It's finally gone to trial. How's it going for the defense?
Going very well, very well. We've been on trial 7 days, and I guess if it was a boxing match, I'd rate it 6 for us, 0 for the prosecution with 1 tie. We've been doing pretty well. We got some very good evidentiary rulings today, and I can't say I've ever seen a case that has been so going so well for the defense, and I've been trying cases for 30 years, so I'm very happy.
Okay, Joel, we'll get into the evidentiary rulings in a minute. I want to talk to you quickly, though, about the civil case. There are some media reports that Chris Peterson has signed a release. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, time goes so fast, Thomas Peterson, first of all, Kathy and Drew had 2 sons, Tom and Chris. Tom turned 18 about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And when he turned 18, he signed a release, saying that releasing his dad from any liability, which may arise from Kathy's death, his mom's death. And yesterday, Chris turned 18, and one of his first things he did was the day after, which was today, he signed the same release, a release releasing his dad from any liability arising out of his mom's death. And that means that the civil lawsuit, which was filed by the Savios, the estate of Kathy Peterson, with the Savios executors, against Drew for wrongful death of Kathy Savio, is now over. The two heirs of the estate have released their father, the defendant, and the case is over. So I'm sure there'll be a dismissal order entered within a few days. I'm going to send copies of the release to the lawyers and to the civil lawyers, and that's that.
Okay, Joel Brodsky is here talking about the Drew Peterson trial. There's some questions and some motions ahead about Dr. Larry Blum, the pathologist. What's going on with that?
Well, Dr. Blum was supposed to testify, was scheduled to testify today, and we were ready for his testimony. But at the last minute, the state pulled out. One of the reasons was that they wanted us to stipulate or agree that the toxicology test that Dr. Blum relied on was accurate, and we weren't willing to do that. And so they felt that now they want to bring in the toxicologist first and to testify and have Blum come back on another day. I can't even imagine the money, bringing a doctor in and getting him ready to testify and all the things that come by with that, and then to cancel him at the last minute so he can fly in a toxicologist from Pennsylvania to testify. It's just an incredible expenditure of money to try on the state side to go through all this. No, it's a no holds bar effort by the state. That's for sure. very unusual that they would change their order of proofs at the last second like that. So I don't know what's going on at the state side.
So, speaking of which, Joel, as far as pathologists go, we've talked about this before on this program. Michael Bodden, Fox News, and now Mark Furman's name is up there. What's going on there?
Oh my gosh! Yeah, it's very funny. I never heard of you. There I am. Day between trials, and I'm back at the back at the hotel, and I'm watching TV and, you know, the Judge Jeanine Pirro show, and there is Mark Furman on as one of her guests talking about the Peterson case. And he said that he and Biden were on the phone. Biden, I guess, was in New York, and Mark Furman was in Chicago, and they each had copies of Dr. Blum's autopsy report. And this is before Kathy's body was ever exhumed. This is, you know, before anything was known, and before she was even exhumed. And they both, he said that they were both looking at the autopsy report, and they both immediately came to the same conclusion that it was a homicide, just looking at the autopsy, at Blum's autopsy report. I mean, Dr. Mitchell's autopsy report, the first pathologist. And I thought that was incredible. Here's the guy supposed to be a scientist, which means, you know, you keep an open mind and you don't make a conclusion until you've seen all the facts. And he's, before he even, had performed the autopsy, before the body was even exhumed for him to do the autopsy, he had already come to the conclusion that that Kathy's death was a homicide. I thought that was highly unusual and highly unprofessional and highly suspicious, especially since he certainly had a monetary, reason for finding it to be a homicide, because he worked for the Great Avian Sustrin Show, and they need cases. You know, if there's no homicide, there's no story. So I just found the whole thing to be very, very suspicious, and I thought a motion should be brought, and we need to find out if there's any, what's going on here between Dr. Biden and Mark Furman in deciding what this case is about, and why Dr. Biden had jumped to a conclusion without having conducted any investigation.
Joel Brodsky's here. Joel, 30 years as a defense attorney, we've talked about this case being tried in the media. What about what you're doing tonight, speaking to me on the program, and the other defense lawyers have been on other programs? What about that? What about the criticism that you're getting for doing these interviews?
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something that, people just think that, running after cameras and, trying to get put our faces, our voices in any event on the media. But you have to understand that there are certain, ethical rules that lawyers have to abide by. they're not suggestions, they're rules we're mandated to follow. And one of them is about trial publicity. And the rule, it says basically that lawyers really shouldn't be doing it. However, the one exception, and it's a big exception, is when it's required in order to offset negative publicity about our client. Then we're allowed to do it. In fact, we our duty to do it. In this case, the state's attorney in Will County, his PR guy, his in-house public relations man, by the name of Mr. Pelkey, every single day trots out a quote-unquote family spokesman and puts her in front of the media. And he brings her. I mean, he briefs her. He brings her in and he takes her out. And puts it before the camera, commenting on the evidence and commenting on how it shows that our client is guilty. Well, in the face of that, we have not only the right, but I think the duty under the ethical rules to take to the airwaves and to offset that negative publicity. Now, the jurors obviously shouldn't been. I'm sure aren't listening to the media, so I don't know how if they could be influenced by all this talking. But I always feel that, this type of stuff, in one way or the other kind of seeps in, it still influences them to some extent. I don't think they can totally 100% get away from it unless they were sequestered in the hotel room, which they're not. So I think it's our duty to, make sure that both sides of the story get out there.
Last question for you, Joel, and I appreciate your time.
I know, I've been spending the last, week and a half or 2 weeks just talking 24/7, so I'm sorry if I ramble on.
No, that's okay. Last question, and it's about hearsay rulings. I put it like a ping pong table. Rulings are going one side to the other side, one side to the other side. Yeah. What about the hearsay, your thoughts from the defense perspective?
Well, yeah, I mean, I believe the hearsay is unreliable and just shouldn't be allowed in court. That's just my opinion, and there are exceptions to the hearsay rule, and it can be applied from time to time. But I don't like hearsay. But in any event, look at Judge. I think this hearsay ruling, Judge Bramilla, I think early on in this case, was taking some heat for being allegedly pro-defense biased. And I think the ruling he made allowing these hearsay statements to come in shows that he's not. Judge Bramilla, there was an appellate court opinion. He looked at it. He had to deal with some findings that the prior judge had made that some of these statements might have been unreliable. We read a lot of law, and we made submissions to him, and then he decided to let it in. I think that he felt bound to under the law, and that was his. You know, he was following the law when he did, and we're going to have to deal with it. Obviously, it makes our case harder, but he made the ruling, and he made it according to the law, which is what he's been doing all along. He's been ruling a lot of evidentiary rulings in favor of defense, I think. Well, he has been. And the reason he's been doing that is because the state has been coming to him with a weak case.
Right.
And, he's just been following the rules of evidence and applying the law in an even-handed fashion without regard to who's making the motion, treating the state the same as the defense. And that's exactly what you want in the judge. If you're being charged with a crime, some friend or relative is, you'd want a judge who's going to even-handedly apply the law no matter what, and that's what he's doing.
All right, Joel Brodsky, thank you, sir, and I'm sure we'll talk again.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Peterson defense attorney Joel Brodsky. Been on the program many times over the years, like I said before. I've even interviewed Drew Peterson two or three times on this program before he was charged. This is a case that's been before the media for many, many years, tried before the media. Some will say it's totally unethical seeing these lawyers go on and do the media shows that they've been doing, including this one, if you want to count me in on that. It's hard to say. He has a valid argument, I think. He's countering what the prosecution is saying. If you look at it, he tried to score it like a boxing card. I've been looking at the trial. I'm not sure if it's as lopsided towards the defense as what Joel says, but we'll have to wait and see. Lots to come. Lots to come. Lots of interesting media perspective in this case. Michael Bodden, Mark Furman, Greta Van Susteren, and Fox News. You name it. It should be interesting. Geraldo was involved in this case big time. What will his defense be? It's hard to say. We're going to take a break. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio, and we're going to come back with Robin Sachs, former prosecutor, current Fox legal analyst, to get the prosecution's perspective of this case. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show, continuing on with our coverage on the Drew Peterson trial. Robin Sachs is here, a former assistant district attorney, Los Angeles County. She is an attorney, Fox News, or Fox legal analyst, author, and a big friend of the program. Hi, Robin.
Hey there.
I just had Joel Brodsky on. Who's?
What did he have to say?
Well,
is he blogging like his co-counsel is?
Yeah, I imagine. And one of the first questions I asked him, and of course, as you know, I've had Joel Brodsky and Drew Peterson on this show many times, and you were one of the ones that would give me hell about it, and that was okay, no problem. But I asked Joel Brodsky this first question. I said, ethically, Joel, what about while a murder trial is going on, you coming on and doing media, my show included? I've seen you on Nancy Grace and other programs. His response was, we're countering what the prosecution is doing. Your thoughts, Robin?
I think it's a risky move that Joel Brodsky and his co-counsel, I forget his name, Mr. Lopez, and it was laughing. He's actually blogging for, I think it's the Chicago Tribune or one of the local writing articles. Those types of things, while they may be helpful potentially, I think that you have to be pretty darn sure that what you're doing is definitely helpful. Because if it is in any way hurtful, it's violating your ethical responsibility to your client.
It's interesting. Would someone from the prosecution team the court, whoever, monitor these interviews that these guys are doing?
If I were the DA, I would be. I mean, that's what I think, you know, one of the benefits for the prosecution is, even if they think that they're countering what the prosecution may be doing, the prosecution gets to hear inside baseball just as much as the listeners, the viewers, and all the folks who are reading and, you know, are absorbing the stuff. So I think that if you wanted to get the play manual of what your opposing counsel is going to do in court, or at least get their mindset as to what's going on in the game, you watch them. I mean, it's very much like basketball. Phil Jackson listens and watches what the other coaches are doing. That's exactly what they're doing from the attorney perspective.
Robin Sachs is here. Check out her webpage, robinsachs.com. When we go back, and this goes back a few years now, Joel Brodsky and Drew Peterson both told me that if this ever went to trial, of course it has, that they're going to do everything possible that they can do in the media. Try it in the media, they said, and by gosh, that's exactly what they're doing. Will this backfire on them?
Well, I think yes, potentially. I think but the media, you know, this case was a big case 4 years ago, right? All over, Nancy Grace was eating it up. Every station, everybody knew about it. Only one here in Los Angeles that is covering this trial, just because I'm personally fascinated by it. And I don't think that the defense needs the media to win this case. I think the media can only hurt the defense. And this is a very, very, very tough prosecution. The prosecution's case has huge issues with it. I mean, they're piecing together a fine tapestry of statements that they're lacing together that are the result of Stacey Peterson's disappearance that then reopened Kevin Chavez's mysterious death, which then gets pieced together about what had happened, you know, some many years ago after a death was ruled an accident. The facts in and of itself are enough to really work with the difficult standard of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Time Drew Peterson gets in front of a camera, everyone remembers how much they hate him. And when you start thinking about how much you hate the guy, then you start worrying about getting convicted on things other than the evidence.
Robin Sachs is here. We're talking the Drew Peterson trial. Hearsay, Crawford versus Washington. You and I have talked about that many times, different cases. The hearsay rulings in this case have ping-ponged back and forth. This judge is saying he's not bound by what other judges have ruled. Talking to Brodsky tonight, asking him questions about hearsay, he's not overly concerned about it. He thinks things will fall their way. What about the hearsay and this case?
Well, I think that the prosecution had scored huge when they have found a judge who is thoughtfully reconsidering each and every statement and thoughtfully making his own determinations and not listening to the prior retired judge's rulings that many of the statements that they wanted to introduce being ruled out. I mean, the prosecution's case seems to live and die on the statements of other people. The only issue that I worry about from the prosecution perspective is that you've always had that appellate issue. So I don't know how anybody, when they're facing murder charges, can feel so confident. I know that, you know, Joel has been very, very confident about his case, and that's great for poker, but for reality, I don't know that you sit there and say we're cool until you get your, hopefully, you're not guilty verdict. But will it stand an appellate review is a whole other question.
You know, when this case first came forward, Drew was arrested, and all the media that was out there and is still out there, although the trial is not being in before the cameras, so to speak, there is still a ton of coverage. The old question comes forward, is this a good reason for an appeal if he is convicted, to say that our client couldn't get a fair trial right from the get-go?
Well, the problem with the whole media and the media argument is not being good for the client is Joel Brodsky, just by what you've just actually said, is the one who is creating and participating in the media. So how can you say, make the argument, my client didn't get a fair trial because of the media, yet you as the attorney are willing to speak to the media and saying, I need to counter what the prosecution is doing by going to the media? So you can't, you know, it's a little bit of talking out of both sides of your mouth. So you seem to lose that argument for appellate issues. The one area that I was very concerned about was the first 2 days of trial, when you had two motions for mistrial on behalf of the defense based on what the prosecution had done. And one of them had me really concerned, and I don't know if you recall this, but this was when the prosecution had the neighbor on the stand referring to the bullet that was on the driveway with no ability to necessarily tie that bullet to Drew Peterson, yet it was being mentioned there. That was a big prosecution no-no. And to me, that was a desperate attempt to try to start putting together a case that seems to be thin. And that's why I think the defense would just do so much better by, you know, employing the Casey Anthony defense, employing the let the prosecution rise and fall on their own case. Don't help the prosecution. Now, listen, do I personally love the fact that the defense is helping the prosecution? Sure, I love it. But, you know, if you saw and watched John Edwards and you watched Casey Anthony, the success in that case was not in countering a new magnificent defense. It was letting the prosecution twist in the wind alone.
Tonight on my show, and I'm not sure if he's done it on other programs or not, but Mr. Brodsky alleges that the famed pathologist Michael Bodden and Mark Furman allegedly had a discussion regarding Kathleen Savio and whether or not her case was a murder before the body was even exhumed. He says he's filing some motions on that behalf and is questioning the ethics of Mr. Bodden and Mr. Furman and Fox News. Your thoughts on bringing in a TV network into a murder trial?
Listen, there's no holds barred here that goes on. I think that you see, actually, it's not the first or the last time that you're going to see a TV network involved in a murder trial. As a matter of fact, E.T. was very much involved in the Anna Nicole Smith case,
yeah,
in terms of what happens in the footage, the video, their presence at the funeral, and what happened prior to, you know, because they were there when, and obviously when Danny Lynn was born. So the media is, sometimes has a way to illuminate that actions and lack of actions of certain people, and they've become relevant. They certainly don't like to be a party to it. I know that their lawyers probably work very hard to preserve all of their journalistic integrity and so forth. But if there's a relevant piece that only they can verify based on what occurred off camera, on camera, then they belong there.
Robin Sachs is here. She's a legal analyst for Fox TV. And an attorney and a friend of the program. What will we see? We're seeing the prosecution case now. Lots of motions here, motions there. This side does this, this side does that. But when the defense actually has their turn, what do you think we're going to hear from them?
Listen, I would not be surprised if Drew Peterson takes the stand. I think that, you know, one of the only ways to combat some of these hearsay statements is to put Drew Peterson on the stand and say, that statement wasn't made, that's not what happened, this is what really happened. I think that's a risky move, but given how narcissistic Drew Peterson is, I mean, he likes to talk. The guy, you know, likes the camera, he likes the attention. He's a narcissist. Joel Brodsky, his co-counsel, they like to talk, they like the attention. So it would be very dramatic to have him testify. So that would be one thing that, you know, could happen. But if I were handling this case, I would not put on, I don't think that they need to put on a defense. I think that the best defense they have is the lack of ability to connect the dots in the prosecution that they have in front of them. I mean, they have a lot of issues with this case based on multiple levels of hearsay, a botched investigation, an exhumed body, someone who's dead, someone who's missing, who's never been found. It's a lot of stuff that, you know, if you played it right, could end up being a whole lot of nothing, even though we all personally believe that there is something there. But certainly where jurors feel bound by the proof beyond a reasonable doubt standard would feel like they needed more, that they would have to know more in order to convict. The defense does not need to help them convict themselves.
Robin Sachs is here. Now, what do you think we'll hear more from the prosecution? I know they're not done yet, but they must have more in their case, I hope.
Right, well, I think we're going to hear from these, I think we're going to start getting into some of the pathologists and look at some of the, what was done wrong. I think that's how they're going to have to approach this, is to why, and they have to explain why this case was ruled an accident and is now a murder case. what was it that biologically changed that makes it so that they've decided that there was some sort of foul play? That's going to be the question that the jurors are going to want to know, because when you have made a finding that says that something was an accident and a conclusion, they're going to have to understand why was it that they were mistaken. So they're going to have to either call themselves liars, call themselves part of a conspiracy, or call themselves mistaken. But they're going to have to provide some sort of reason to the jury so that they can understand why circumstances change. And the circumstances changing, it's not enough that a wife number four went missing.
What about wife number four? The defense putting her on the witness list, saying that she's could walk into the courtroom any time. People aren't really buying that.
Well, if I was a defense, I would step too. I mean, I would put her on the stand. If you want to have the appearance be that she may testify, she's the only one who is responsible for her disappearance, and it's not criminally related. The best thing to do is be convinced that she's still here. As a matter of fact, I had a murder case myself that I was handling, and it was a case that we called, it was a no-body case. And, the last thing I was going to do was agree that the person was gone or dead. I was going to, I said, oh, the person could be in Mexico, the person could have been here, the person could have been there, and I put that person on the witness list, too. That's all you can do.
Robin Sachs is here. A couple of questions, Robin, before I let you go, and I appreciate your time. With the appeal process and everything else going on, the questions in the jury system with Casey Anthony and all this, will this case bring more negativity to the jury system that we have today or the trial system as we know it? Or is this something that the judge is doing a pretty good job with?
I think the judge is doing a good job with. I think the thing that we need to think about, I think a lot of people really blame jurors. And granted, there's a lot of frustration with jurors. But by and large, I think that jurors really take their oath seriously. And I think the number one mistake that happens with prosecutors, and it's with the help of people like Nancy Grace, is that these prosecutors drink their own Kool-Aid. They read their own press. They feel like their case is so strong. So we saw it with John Edwards. We've seen it with Casey Anthony. And if it happens to a group of prosecutors, you can't convict someone for just being a jerk. You have to have the evidence, like it or not. And trust me, it's our system. Whether I like it or not, would I like to lower the standard of proof? Maybe that's a different discussion. But if you don't have the conviction or conviction of the individual jurors and therefore a conviction amongst the jury as a whole, you can't have a conviction. It's just the way it is.
Well, I'm sure we'll have lots more to talk about. Robin Sachs, attorney, legal analyst, Fox 11 LA. Thank you, ma'am. You're always welcome
here.
Thank
you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. That's Robin Sachs from Fox 11 LA talking about the prosecution's perspective. We've seen it in this case, actually, pretty much since day one. The hearsay is going to be a big part of it, that there is no physical evidence. That Michael Bodden and Mark Furman and Fox TV were just trying to get a story, according to the defense. The defense saying that they're going to run this trial in the media the best they can. The ethics involved, the hatred for Drew Peterson. Like I say, having him on the program, I probably got the most hate mail ever, but probably the most listeners ever for those two shows. We'll take a break and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. When I was doing the show prep for the program this evening, planning my guests and getting everything ready. A person who I threw out a quick email to come on the program and talk to, and I haven't talked to her for a couple of months, is Susan Murphy Milano, victims advocate, domestic violence expert, someone who has been part of this program for many, many, many years. I received a email back within minutes, actually, reminding me, or asking me if I knew that Susan was ill, that she's battling stage 4 cancer. And it took my breath away because I did not. I knew that Susan had had some health problems, but I did not know it was to that extreme. I'm going to ask you now to go to the webpage, www.conqueringcancer.me. So that's www.conqueringcancer.me, and you'll learn more about Susan and the fight that she's fighting. Here's someone who has been on the side of the victim for a good part of her life. She is a victim of domestic violence. Her father killed her mother, and he killed himself. And all that she's done in the field of domestic violence, the books she's written, the help that she's given, Time's Up. We've talked about that with her many times on the program. Now it's Susan's turn to fight. She is fighting the fight of her life. There are fundraisers going on. You can make donations to help Susan with her fight, and I encourage that you do that by going to conqueringcancer.me. Again, I was shocked to hear that her case was so bad, and we will make a quick phone call here in a minute, and we're going to get one of Susan's friends on, Delilah, to get more information on Susan Murphy Milano and her battle with stage 4 cancer. So I ask you, just stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. Again, talking more about Susan Murphy Milano, I have her friend Delilah on the air with me. Hi.
Hi, everyone.
You know, we emailed a little bit today, Delilah, you and I back and forth, and I'm ashamed to say I knew Susan had had some health issues, but I did not know that they were as bad as this. She, I think, was a guest on my program in May, maybe June. I'm not sure the exact date. But I've been talking with my audience here a little bit, my history with Susan, all the shows that we've done together, and how she has spent her life fighting the good fight for victims of domestic violence, trying to help others. And now Susan's in the fight of her life. Give us an update, if you could.
Well, you're very right, Dana. She, you know, anybody who knows Susan and who's familiar with her work knows how much she's given up for other people, for victims of violence, and how she's, all the accomplishments she's done to make it a better world for them. And she, you know, obviously is very ill right now. They are, you know, we're very positive with the right treatments, that everything could turn out very well. And that's what we're holding on to, is the hope that keeps everything going here. It's just a tough battle. It's a very tough battle for all of us.
Having lost loved ones to cancer and, you know, the evil C word, we like to say, when you hear the term stage four, a lot of people, Delilah, don't understand what that is. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, from what I understand, you know, I've learned a lot about cancer and going through this with Susan and going to the doctor with her every day. She's got a wonderful doctor, Dr. Akuri at Aware Med in Myrtle Beach, who is very good about explaining things that we really never thought about. And one of the things that she was very good to us about was explaining the nature of cancer and the behavior of cancer and how she goes about trying to rein it in, so to speak. We all live with cancer cells in our bodies,
right.
And unfortunately, the statistics say now 1 in 3 people are going to have a battle with cancer of some sort. We tend to create an environment for cancer to grow in our bodies by the toxic things we eat and breathe and drink. So we've had quite the education on, you know, how to change that environment. And that's one of the steps to reining in the cancer, is changing the environment, cleaning up that environment, detoxing and eating, you know, wholly organic foods and the best foods that you can get.
Delilah's here, and we're talking about our good friend of the program and my personal friend, Susan Murphy Milano. And again, I ask that you go to conqueringcancer.me to learn more about Susan, her fight with her stage 4 cancer, and please consider a donation to help with the cause. Delilah, when it comes to Susan, and I know her very well, I've been on the side of her wrath when she's been upset with me. I've been on the side of her praise when she has praised me. She's a tough nut. How is she coping with the pain?
Like a tough nut. It's, you know, you've been around this disease. You know that everyone's going to have really good days, and then they're going to have bad days, and where, you know, there's vomiting, there's pain. But on the really good days, she's Susan. You know, her energy level isn't quite what it used to be. You know, we're hoping that all of this comes back and she comes out of the gun a whole new person. I think it's also one of those things, it's a life-changing ordeal, as you know, where priorities tend to change. And I think when Susan gets back, the world may see a different person. I think that she's obviously had time away from the work that she does to reflect on herself and healing herself and, you know, getting in touch with herself, which is another very important part of overcoming the disease of cancer.
Yeah, like it says on the webpage, your attitude is your best pain management tool. And that is so true. Susan Murphy Milano, with her, and you know as well as anyone, with her history, her family tragedy and everything else that's gone on, knowing her, I bet that she's probably more concerned with everything else that's going on and probably putting herself on the other side. I hope not. That's not what's happening, but you tell her I'm going to come down there and kick her in the butt unless she starts looking after
no,
herself.
It's definitely not. And, you know, really, Dana, I think this is one of the hardest lessons Susan had to learn, and the doctor told her from the very beginning, you know, you have to take care of you.
Right.
She doesn't know how to do that.
I know.
She, you know, for all of these years and all the, you know, growing up in the household that she did, she was a caretaker. She took care of things. She, you know, she was the one who you could go to for help, and she was always, always there to give it. Now it's, the tables are turned, and that's, like I say, been one of the hardest lessons for her, is to just sit back, receive the care, receive the love, receive the donations. You know, there again, that was another little obstacle we had to overcome, is, she doesn't think she's worthy. I mean, come on. Of course she is. But to convince her of that was very difficult.
She's more than worthy. If you looked up courage and compassion in the dictionary, sure, you would see her picture. And I've told her that before, and she always would slough me off, saying, no, no, there are others. But when someone dedicates their life to something, Delilah, and you know Susan, they dedicate their lives to it, and they have done that. Well, what's next for more treatment?
Yeah, we're starting into what they call low-dose chemo treatments. And, you know, I have to tell you, a lot of this is dependent on money. Right. Unfortunately, in our country, the United States, if you don't have health insurance, your treatments come out of your own pocket. I was absolutely amazed at the cost of just the drugs, let alone, you know, the doctor's time, the doctor visits, the times that, you know, have to go in for testing, lab work. Lab work can be $15,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the medical bills are mounting up tremendously. Her doctor has been so gracious to, you know, donate as much of her time as she possibly can, and she's with us in this 24 hours. I've never seen anybody like her in my life. You know, a doctor that calls you two or three times a day if you're not in there over the weekends. So she's done a tremendous job of keeping Susan going and letting her see that this, she can be helped.
The positive attitude is the important thing, and Susan, I know,
absolutely,
has that positive attitude. And again, I hope you all go to conqueringcancer.me to learn more about Susan's fight. And Delilah, thanks for spending time with us tonight. Give Susan a hug for me, please.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for, you know, giving us the platform to get the message out to your listeners who are also Susan's listeners. So
absolutely.
We appreciate every single card, every letter, every dollar that has come this way, and we love each and every one of you. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's a little bit more about our friend Susan Murphy Milano. You know, one of the early guests on my Scared Monkeys radio program, going back a number of years now, and doing many shows with her. It just breaks your heart. And again, dumb me, I guess, I did not know that she was as ill as she is. And hopefully she'll be able to fight the good fight. Knowing Susan, I'm sure she'd be able to. Conquering cancer, spread your sunshine today. Share your smile, show kindness first. Lead with love. The person that you may help most is you. And that comes from conqueringcancer.me, Susan Murphy Milano's battle. And we all hope and pray for the best for Susan. Well, that's it. That's tonight's show. I apologize for my croakiness. I've been battling the flu for the last couple of days, but I will suck it up because we have people like Susan Murphy Milano out there with a lot bigger problems health-wise than just a poor old flu. I hope you enjoyed it. We will be back real soon here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Good night, everybody.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.